far away from my friend and relation, betrayed by the black velvet band.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Shropshire Witches. I'm Alex.
And I'm Amy.
And we are very excited to bring you, this is, well, it's the first episode of CZ's, can't even speak, series three. So we're very, very excited about this. We've got, in this episode, we've got a two-parter. We haven't done this before, so this is a new one for us. But we just, when we discuss this and doing it, it's such a broad subject and something we're both so excited about. We were both like, let's do this as a two-parter. There's no other way to do it. So we are going to talk about the history of beauty. And today we're going to sort of go medieval up to about the Georgian era, give or take. And then in the next episode, we'll do Victorians on to sort of the kind of the supermodels of the 90s. But Amy, you're going to talk to us about some sort of folklore, some recipes, various things, aren't you?
Yes, so I'm very much going to stay in the medieval period and tell you a little bit about what it meant to be beautiful during the medieval period and also kind of some of the double standards, I imagine. And I think that's going to be a thread that runs through a lot of our conversations throughout all of it, is the double standard, the double pronged fork of beauty, and how being beautiful could often be to your downfall. So I think what I'll do is I'll start with the medieval, yeah, and then we'll, as we move forward to the Georgian period, the folklore will become more prominent, and we'll talk about a few little bits, beauty tips in Shropshire on how Shropshire women kept themselves beautiful.
That sounds fabulous.
So our first kind of, obviously, for as long as there have been people, there have been ways in which human beings have tried to beautify themselves, to make themselves look more attractive, feel better about themselves, and also kind of, you know, attract the opposite sex or the same sex, whichever one you want to try and get the attention of. But our first kind of real reference or manual for feminine beauty was from around the 11th century. And it was written at Salniero, which I can't pronounce, which came out awfully. sorry, people of Salniero. But this is a wonderful kind of treatise on female beauty, and it gives us an idea of what medieval women prized, or what medieval men prized and put on medieval women. Mm-hmm. And it has been kind of, it's been attributed to several different people, including a lady physician, but the verdict's out on who actually wrote it. If we were to kind of summarize, for because obviously the medieval period is a very, very long period of history, depending on who you talk to, it's up to 1,000 years, but certainly from the kind of 1100s through to about the 1400s. But for the probably the vast majority of that, the beauty ideal was a high forehead, very, very plucked eyebrows, small, even teeth, a fair complexion, a long neck, a narrow chest, low sloping shoulders, high, small waist, and in some cases, a prominent stomach, because that showed fertility. So, yeah, completely the opposite to me.
And to be honest, that sounds like an HB pencil. Like, that sounds insane.
Yes, but, or an alien.
Looks like that? That isn't on like The Simpsons or something.
But certainly, this very, very kind of fair skin, plucked eyebrows, fair hair. Also, hair was meant to be very, very blonde. You get numerous references throughout medieval literature to the flaxen-haired and golden-haired women, and that being a sign of beauty. That was really, and we're going to unpick it in a little bit more detail, but that, if you was to pick your stereotypical medieval woman or idealized medieval woman, it would be that. And rather interestingly, in the medieval period, a woman's physical appearance was also in many ways indicative of a moral character. So if you were outwardly physically beautiful, it was a sign of high moral virtue, obviously.
Of course,
And
yeah.
if you had been hit with the ugly stick, as my lovely dear old nan would have said, that meant that you had no morality.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean,
But
that's a bit of a kind of like a double whammy. They're like, I'm really like, you're not fit, but also based on that, I'm going to say that you're probably a bit of shit as well. And you're like, oh, thank you. Thank
you're
you.
just an awful person.
Yeah, don't know
But
why
then
you're
it gets
from.
even more confusing because if you're a beautiful woman, you're dangerous because you could entice men towards sin.
Oh God,
So,
do what, make up your own minds. Like, do you know, I'm not even going on that tangent of like, she's beautiful, she made me do it. No, penis man, you chose to do that.
to be beautiful during the medieval period, and we'll unpick this in a little bit more detail shortly, was it was a tightrope that one had to walk. It was the idea that you, if you were beautiful, you had been bestowed by God, you were with this beauty, you were almost a favorite of God, but you could be the undoing of someone. And there's a wonderful quote by Liz Herbert McAvoy that says, "Salvation was always jeopardized by the unruly flesh. The flesh eventually took on a synonymy with the female and the dangerously seductive body. Moreover, it was the body that could not only corrupt men from without, but also the woman from herself from within." So to be beautiful could corrupt men, it could cause issues for men, but also you, if you focus too much on your beauty and you showed kind of sinful pride, it was a great hubris and it could cause about your own moral decay and downfall. So really, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
I mean, to be honest, I'm just getting this is the sequel to Malleus Maleficarum. That's what I'm getting. This is like the beauty edition of Malleus Maleficarum. That's its vibe. You're like, okay, it's giving a bit.
And there's a number of references throughout medieval literature and also throughout kind of areas as well, is that particularly if a woman used beauty products, she exposed a great hubris, and a woman who tried to make herself more beautiful was, quote, at one with Lucifer. So literally, if you slap on a bit of makeup, you're there with the devil. And it's bizarre to think that these stereotypes of makeup still kind of have been throughout history. You can see
Oh,
in the
yeah.
medieval period, women who wear makeup being these sinful harlots, and even now, you can see that. I've been a woman that's worn an awful lot of makeup because I'm a
Yeah.
bit of a goth. And I've also been someone who wears none, and it's that fluctuation between are you all right, are you unwell, which I get now. The best one I ever had was a student asked me if why I wore a gray eyeshadow on the bottom of my eyes and not the top. It's like, darling, these are bags.
I'm a teacher, okay?
Yes,
So you are the
this is
reason.
teaching. But also that women would have had the same pressures in the medieval period. And when we look at these kind of the beauty things, I'm going to be talking about the medieval beauty things, it's very much your middle into upper class women. It's not necessarily working class. It's not that they didn't have beauty, or didn't use beauty products, because certainly they would have, but there was we ha only have what's written about the well-offs, don't we? So certainly there was a lot of gendered pressures on how you should look. You've got another wonderful quote from a medieval account called The Romance of the Rose, where it says women are synonymous with sexual desire, but that makes them, and then it goes on to say that they're dangerous beings because of it. The guy who wrote The Romance of the Rose counsels husbands to have sex with their wives, but to never reveal any secrets to them.
Yeah, well, you can't. You
Because
can't have
women
sex,
are
but you mustn't
unstable.
confide in them. Yeah, just don't do it, obviously.
No.
It's ludicrous, isn't it? You know, it's just interesting this, and I'm not going to make it the trope for the whole episode, of course, but it is undeniable, as well, you didn't allude to, as you sort of outright said, these are still stereotypes that last today. So, you know, as I say, I've seen you both makeup, no makeup, you like this kind of artistic, fantastic makeup that is like is kind of like this brilliant expression. It's when people do makeup like that, I find it really artistic. I think it's brilliant.
Thank you.
I know, I mean it, it's true. And the thing is, when people think like that things are for the male gaze, or is that for us? And you're like, yeah. All of this is for those middle-aged men that I'm so keen to appeal to. No, it's not for you. It's for me. And to be honest, like I love seeing beautiful women. I love seeing women, however they can do things to their faces, their hair, whatever. I think it's excellent. And this idea that women are catfishing, I always find that interesting because the people that say that very often are on social media. And then have you seen the men that say that accuse the women of catfishing? You're like, oh,
Yeah, and
interesting.
it would have been
Well positioned
exactly
to
the
comment on
same
that. Oh,
in
yeah.
the medieval period.
It's all
It would
illusion
have.
and things like that. Like that, that's, I mean, I'll go on to it later on, but obviously in about 1770, there was that act that was to protect men from being beguiled into marriage by false adornments of women, whatever the age, sort of, wearing makeup and various things that made them prettier in case the next day the husband's like, oh my God, you don't look like that. And it's like, what about, in contrast, what she has to wake up to as well. But I think
Yeah.
that we know, of course, the vast majority of men are not like this. Most of you have said,
No.
we know this,
Yeah.
but there are still then, as there are today, men that think it's either for the male gaze or it's deception or whatever. And I think, do you know what? If there's a young woman, an older woman, whatever it may be, who expresses themselves by just looking lovely, go for it. I think it's
Yeah,
wonderful. We
let them
love to
be.
see a woman, whatever age, whether it's kind of a young teenager, an older woman, just sort of looking just beautiful and glamorous. And I think, why not? I don't always feel that's for anybody else, but for them. Some people just love to do
Yeah.
that. And I really love that. And I think if there are those that want to kind of tread on that or think it's for the men or it's for attention, or they can go fuck themselves, frankly. Sorry to swear, but it's true.
Yeah. And it's interesting because beauty was seen as a gift from God, even though it had all these kind of trappings and ways and pitfalls, it gave kind of the church kind of a license to decide what women should be doing with their bodies. And it upheld this kind of social classification that categorized women in terms of age, health, sex, purity. And it meant that the body became, and it was more than just kind of your face, it was your whole body became not so much an expression of yourself, like we've just discussed, but a marker of your worthiness, your station, your inner morality. And when you read accounts of what is deemed beautiful, it's the list is so long that it's like, how can that person possibly be all these people? I listed off some, but to give some more, a small hair, a small head,
Small hair.
eyebrows set apart, long and arched, large, prominent, colorful, and shining eyes with long lashes, small, delicate ears, a long throat. I don't even really know what a long throat looks like. Face white, and we'll look at some of how women went and tried to make their face pale, but paleness was really prized. And you see them making biblical allusions to the Old Testament, things like the Song of Solomon. Thomas Aquinas, I teach religious studies, for those who don't know, and Thomas Aquinas pops up quite a lot. But he seems to have just been, I don't know, a bit bored in the medieval period, so he wrote a lot about different things. But he actually wrote kind of not quite a treatise, but a idea on women's beauty, and he said that it should all be based on Pythagoras's theory of proportion and relation to the surrounding features. And it's one of those where it's like, why don't we just let these women
How do we let them live their lives? They still
yeah.
talk to Bella Hadid, people that the symmetry of her face means she's literally got the perfect face. You're like, okay, great.
Yeah,
But all
good
the
for
pressure that comes with that. Also, how I would say, just from a simple Google search for anyone who's not familiar, I already know who he is, but Google him, see what Thomas looks like, and let's see if he isn't well placed to tell us what beauty is. Okay.
Yeah, he did
He
say
looks
when he
exactly
when
like someone who would be behind a keyboard going, this is what pretty women look like. Okay, Thomas.
yeah
It's not hot, just in case you couldn't read the subtext of that text.
He did when he was questioned about women's use of cosmetics, which I want to move on to. He kind of begrudgingly said that a woman had to make herself as attractive as possible for her husband, so he might not stray to the sin of adultery. But he cautioned women not to make themselves so beautiful that she should attract other husbands. So again, it's this mental gymnastics where
Everything in moderation.
if a woman is too beautiful, she's a harlot and she's sending men to her ruin, but she can't be an absolute, monster because her husband will stray to some other woman. So it's again these gendered pressures that continue. I think it would have been particularly pertinent for women who were in kind of your aristocratic royal kind of backgrounds, because they were often sold into marriage like chattel, and you didn't necessarily have a say who you married. And there's numerous famous examples of that throughout the medieval period and beyond, of women who were married to a man they'd never met and then criticized for the way they look or that kind of thing. So certainly we have this precedence that you needed to look a certain way, and they had very rigid ideas of what a woman should look like, which was then backed up by religion and backed up by things like Pythagoras and stuff. That's not to say that makeup didn't exist. Again, we've been painting for our faces for probably as long as we've had faces. That could be a t-shirt quote, couldn't
It's
it?
quite harrowing though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
As
is, isn't it?
long as we've had faces, you're like, right, Christ. I mean,
Yeah,
it's
come on
incredibly
down.
harmful, but like, you feel like if just one slight change in tone and that could be very menacing.
Yes, very sinister.
It was still
And
friendly, but yeah, make sure you emphasize that. It's not
that's my vibe, is friendly but
a
feminine.
thing. What's the subtext? Don't dig.
Yeah.
Don't make eye contact.
So you do see a lot of the clergy criticizing makeup. Thomas Aquinas does say that women should be allowed, but don't make yourself too beautiful. But there have
Thanks,
been,
Tom.
thanks, Tom. I'm glad you got your opinion.
So glad you came to the party, Tom. Also,
Thanks,
Tommy's
mate.
here. It's okay, guys. Thomas Aquinas is here. You can chill.
So women did prize the idea of a pale face, and that's something that you'll see throughout history. The idea that if you were paler, you probably weren't working in the fields or doing kind of manual work. You were a beautiful, it has kind of ideas about virginity and that kind of thing as well. So many women during the medieval period would paint their faces white to achieve a paler looking complexion, much like I did when I was in my teens. And there's lots of different things they would use. Some women would use wheat, so wheaten flour, lead-filled cosmetics as well.
Foolproof.
Also thing, foolproof, just get slap some lead on your chops.
Don't worry about the receding gums and the hair loss, you'll be
Yeah,
fine. Yeah.
doesn't matter. And then you've also got things called like Madonna Lily, which was said to whiten your face. Also grinding up lily root and making that into a powder for your face. But it doesn't, when we look at what's actually been written down about grounding up, that it doesn't tell you what lily it actually is. We've got a recipe from the 13th century for a flower-based cosmetic. And it says that there is a white makeup that is very easy to make. Put a very pure wheat in water for 15 days. Already seems like hard work.
I was going to say,
Then
yeah,
yeah,
opening line.
grind and blend it in the water, strain up a cloth and let it crystallize and evaporate. You will obtain a makeup which will be as white as snow. When you want to use it, mix it with rose water and spread it on your face, which has first been washed with warm water, then dry your face with a cloth. And that's certainly said to make you look nice and spooky and pale.
Did Gwyneth Paltrow write that? Like, that's
Yes,
great, isn't
yeah.
it? You're like, that's very kind of, it's not that relatable, is it? This is really
No.
handy for all of you who are working in the fields and things. So for 15 days, hand your rose.
Yeah, go and do this. Yeah.
Thank you, Brother Cadfael.
And so we know that women would have painted their faces white. So that's a start. So any women listening or men that want to be a medieval standard beauty standard, get a white face.
Don't use Venetian cerise though, because
Please, yeah, don't use
go
lead, please.
bald
No.
and or die.
And there is some discussions around eyeliner. To be honest, I could have done a whole episode just on eyeliner, its
Tell us about
introduction.
eyeliner though. I love
So
eyeliner.
I
Millennial, we love it.
certainly places like Egypt, the Middle East. You had coral eyeliner that was very popular for men and women from, you know, we've got references of it from the 8th, 9th, 10th century. The women of the Rus as well were listed in the 10th century as using eyeliner and eyeshadow. And predominantly that was used to kind of keep the sun out of your eyes, or it had a more practical purpose. But certainly, Byzantine and Middle Eastern, Egyptian places like that go in and out of fashion a little bit. I'm sure when we do talk about the Edwardian and the late Victorians, we'll talk about the Egyptian craze where everyone was dressed in as mummies and things. But the medieval period saw that kind of exotic, with quotation marks, look as quite exciting as well. So there are some references, particularly in areas that do meet, like the Rus, like Spain, of women wearing eyeliner. And that also when people like the Vikings were listed, Viking men as wearing eyeliner as well. But again, that would have had a quite prominent practical purpose. But when we look at kind of paintings from the High Middle Ages, or also a lot of our evidence for this kind of thing is from statues or sculptures, you do tend to see that classic high forehead, pale, very unadorned eyes. So I think it would have gone in and out of vogue. And certainly we know that they had the technology to produce eyeliner. It's been, you know, going on since Mesopotamia and Egypt, ancient Egypt. But for much of the medieval
European,
period in the West, it wasn't as big of a thing as places where they'd have had contact with people from the Middle East or areas like that.
You
So
have more of
it's,
an influence,
And another massive one within medieval beauty for makeup was lip balms, lipsticks, and stains. We loved a bit of that. We loved making lip balm that also left kind of like your lip stains today. And there's one reference that was published in 1557, so a little bit later than the medieval period, that says that you were to take a sweet smelling grease. Don't want to think about what that is.
I don't know, that could be,
That will keep the lips and hands from chapping and make them moist and soft. And there's lots of different kind of references to lips, particularly I think when you're, because you're going to be so pale, you want that kind of
bit of color and
glowing. And rouge as well was a big kind of, well, trend. And the manufacturer of rouge uses things like safflower. I can't speak today for some reason.
a
And
cochineal.
other or other plants. It's natural based. There's a poem that was written by a monk in 1180, and he said that the statues of the churches complained to God that there is not enough le paint left to adorn them because all the ladies who use rouge and cream. So certainly,
Whatever your belief, it's never too tenuous to blame the woman, is it? There's always the opportunity. If you're determined enough, you can blame
blame the woman.
your vanity.
So, you know, the vanity was seen as such a problem that the statues are complaining. And it is interesting because you do see in medieval sources a lot of references to vanity. So like it's you know, it's a famous idea that the Vikings, when the Vikings invaded Europe, there was lots of places where the Viking style of hair and the Viking style of fashion became very in vogue because the Vikings were quite clean and quite vain. So then the churchmen, they criticize these heathens for not only being, you know, pagans that are destroying the place of God, but also because they love themselves a little bit too much.
Maybe they were just tall and dishy, and the monks were like, "We're not having that.
No, stop
Let's
it.
can't block fighting
So
marginalia, slagging them off."
yeah, so you've got these kind of repeated references. We do have ideas of how women painted themselves. I'm going to look at skincare in a moment. But there is an undercurrent of women being chastised for it. And I think one of the most famous examples is Eleanor of Aquitaine, who was absolutely prized for her beauty, and we're told throughout, to the point where if you open her Wikipedia page, there's a whole section for her appearance.
Oh, and how hot she was, yeah.
Yeah, and this woman, queen of beauty and largesse, God save Queen Eleanor, who was the arbiter of honor, wit, and beauty, but also being the most beautiful woman completely detracted from Eleanor's brilliance because she was a remarkable
I was
woman.
going to say she was formidable, wasn't she? Like,
Yes,
yeah.
yeah. But also it takes away the fact that she was incredibly intelligent, and also her admirable beauty meant that she was this immoral person. We could do a whole kind of discussion on Eleanor of
Yeah.
Aquitaine, but there's always this idea that a beautiful woman is going to bring about her own downfall, but also other people's downfall. And that is something that is continued throughout the medieval period, all the way through and beyond, even to today.
Oh, without going, handsome men, they sort of get revered, or they're lads about town or things like that. But it's the women, you know. I mean, look, again, we can discuss things like this in the next episode, but people like Marilyn Monroe, and you know, the list is endless. Brigitte Bardot, you know, there's a long list of people within memory, who've been treated in a certain way because of their beauty, and very often victims in their own right because of it as well. So it's, yeah, it's a fascinating, it's a broad, you know, it could end up being like a five-parter.
No, it could, and I think that's what's so interesting about going back and looking at the med and starting in the medieval is you're seeing where the origins, and it's probably not even the origins of some of these ideas. Certainly as long as there has been Christendom and arguably all religions, there has been an idea of the sinful, lustful woman taking away men and leading them to sin. And that's why, monasticism and things like that managed to become such a prominent thing during the medieval period. And I just think it is fascinating because behind all of these gendered pressures, there was a woman or a young girl trying to navigate her place in the world. And I think that's the most pertinent thing for me is that when you look at more of the folkloric remedies and things like that, it's something that you might be told by your mum or your grandma, and it's something that's always been done. But certainly within the medieval period, yes, certain ideals stayed throughout that kind of very virginal, pale, blonde.
Well,
But
that last, I mean, that's in Dickens, and I think, you know, you've got the idea of the printing press coming in the 15th century, which changed so much, but still the rate of how literate people were. But a lot of these pamphlets and things that came into circulation were read aloud, and like you say, it became just as, like, you know, your granny might always say, make sure you always moisturise your neck and moisturise upwards and use Pond's cream or Astral or
Pond's
Nivea
cream.
cream, whatever it may be. Also, Nivea cream is a thick night cream. You look insane. Honestly, it's a game changer. But you know, everybody's got these little tips, and I think it's fascinating. Our ancestors were no different. You know, there was a fantastic one that was talking, and I about women with smaller boobs, and I absolutely hear you as a
Which was
woman.
prominent in the Victorian, no, in the medieval period, that was prized too, is the smaller the
Is it a
boobies, the
smaller, like,
better.
exactly? And then going into the Tudor, they called them duckies, which I always think is hilarious. But there was a recipe, and I didn't note it down. I wish I had. I'll try and get it for the next one so I can read out. But they talked about a recipe that could help give a little sort of oomph to the breasts. But also, don't worry, boys, because you can use it on the testicles. So it'll be
Oh,
very
good.
important back. So you could use it on both. So I do love those little glimpses of when they're like, you know, this can help your boobs bigger. But don't worry, boys, if you've got like a little, you know, a smaller sack, they will become pendulous with this cream. But some of the recipes, and people have made them, you know, and they've got this really lovely consistency. And they use things like tallow that actually really does work for your skin. It's like sort of Victorian candle makers and things would have found they had really beautifully smooth skin. But this idea that we kind of laugh now, like, hey, look how high, they're sort of preternaturally high hairlines. Well, I know that, and their name was going to come up, and I hate myself for it, but the Kardashians. I know people saying Kim Kardashian had part of her hairline lasered. Of course she did. Because of course you did. These bizarre things, Brazilian bumless, all these things that, you know, how's that going to look in 100 years? Because I tell you, it already looks weird, let alone what they're going to say. So I think, you know, the same we mentioned Venetian Cerise, this lead makeup that would recede the gums, could make you irascible, could make your hair fall. Like, these are probably best case scenarios. It was really quite dark. But it could make the skin look great. And as things were going more into the Renaissance, and that sort of look fell to the side a bit. But this idea that people think, oh, they didn't know what they were doing, they absolutely knew that it was poisonous. But people do Botox today, and it's not my thing, but there's no judgment on anyone that does. But that is something that paralyzes your muscles. So, you know, in the long term, I'm just going to say that it cannot be good for you. I know that's, you know, some people will listen and go, oh, blah, blah, but it just can't. It can't. I'm afraid it can't be. And I think these are the, you know, maybe not quite as aggressive as Venetian Cerise, but in some ways, yeah. So I think we all do it. You know, we might wear fake tan, whatever we wear. We're pretty trusting of what we put on our skin without sort of delving too deep. And actually, a lot of these things probably aren't great, you know. So I think we're not really any different from our ancestors. We just maybe don't put lip on our face, or mercury in our wallpaper. But you know, and I know even kind of going into the 18th, 19th century, they were eating mercury wafers and they liked that sort of consumption chic. But you know, you could judge them for that. But look at heroin chic in Kate Moss's. I mean, I'm not going to say Kate Moss's day because she's still in her day, girls aging like a fine wine. But you know, the 90s peak Kate Moss. It hasn't changed. This idea of suddenly wanting to be thin, then being bigger with big boobs and a big bum, then going thin again. You know, these the way the female body has to oscillate and change. Sadly, I think will never alter. Like, you,
No, it's a battleground, isn't
yeah,
it? And
constantly. I think it always will
sadly,
be, I'm afraid.
the women whose bodies are being fought over are never the ones that are allowed to go, actually, I kind of just want to be like this,
Yeah, do
or
you mind if I just
you know
don't have a
what?
preternaturally small waist or
Yeah,
whatever else?
crone. I
Yeah.
want to be a crone. That's
Yeah,
where I
can
want
I
to be.
just, no, well, you can't do that because then they'll come after you for witches for having an odd mark or something, like any kind of menopausal symptoms. They're like, are you a witch? It's like, okay, well, that we can't win. So even when we go into our decrepitude, they then sort of, you know, you come into a whole new category, don't you? It's yeah. The lesson we've got from today as we close the episode is women can't win. No, I'm joking. We're not finishing the episode.
No, we're not, but certainly that
Whatever
will be.
happens, men are going to say something about us. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting because when I was having a little look at some of the skincare that medieval women did, you did still see things that when you were reading it said, you know, whatever you do, do not try this at home. So that is also my disclaimer, is do not try some of these at home, because we now know it to be poisonous. But a lot of it actually came from the earth. It was herbal remedies or natural things. Tallow, again, that was one that was massively featured.
Yeah.
Things like wheat flour mixed with vinegar and boiled together, that was said to heal freckles. The juice of
Feel
a house, I know. The juice of a house leek was meant to be to stop eruptions of the skin, which I imagine is
the
acne.
juice of a house leaks. You mean the water from a house that's leaked, or have I misunderstood that? Yeah.
So a house leek is a plant. It's
Oh, okay. Is that just like a really horrific way? Like, it's not like a sexualized way of saying like a spillage in the house. A house leek. So that is that in the leek family?
I
So a
think
leek, like,
so,
oh, that's, God, you learn something every day.
You do it every day as
Except people
a
listening might be like, how the chuff does she not know what a house leek is?
school day.
God.
That's what we get cancelled for.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they're like, no, that's it.
I've had enough of them.
I don't like it. Oh, it does. I just look, it doesn't look like it. It looks like a little sort of succulent. Anyway, please carry on.
So also things like aloe vera were used,
Oh, yeah, still, yeah.
things like cucumber juice, strawberry juice and water was said to take away the redness of the face.
They
Sundew,
still
which
use
is
all
an
that and strawberry for inflamed skin and things. Oh, wow, okay, sorry, carry on, yeah.
Sundew mixed with milk remove freckles. Again, you want to get rid of those stubborn freckles. Garlic could take away blemishes of the skin. There was a lot of distilled water of certain plants used as well, particularly in France. Things like elderflower and stuff like that. So a lot of the actual base levels of what you were putting on your face, what you're putting on your skin actually came from the natural world. It just wasn't necessarily what was good to put on your face. You've
Wow.
got ointments were a massive thing because not only did you need to be fair, you needed to also have smooth, unblemished skin, particularly when there was outbreaks of kind of smallpox or diseases. You wanted to be the one, and that again you see throughout history, you wanted to be the person with the smooth, unblemished skin. So some of them would have actually been quite good to use. You've got tallow again, honey being used, flour of cowslips and added to hog's grease. Something funny about the phrase hog's grease.
Hog's grease. That sounds bloody great. It sounds like something off Deliverance. That's horrendous. Hog's grease. You're like, oh God, I'd rather you just said like pig fat. Don't call it hog's grease.
Don't
You're like,
call
oh
it.
God. Don't get the hog grease out.
So I found a reference to which is some 14th century England herbal remedies to banish freckles, because I am a freckly girl.
I don't have freckles.
And when I was a lot younger, I love my freckles now, but when I was a
Wow.
lot younger, I really did not want freckles.
Oh,
So
I love
obviously,
freckles. Yeah.
we're going to get
I wish
some
I had them.
advice from 14th century England, and one of them is to anoint the face with the blood of a
Always.
bull or a hare. So
Yeah,
if you can't
good.
quite get yourself around to killing a bull, pick a hare and just smear your face with the blood.
Yes.
That's going to get rid of
Like an
them.
excellent idea.
The juice of a grated celandine, I think that's a plant, mixed with a powder of brimstone. Willow tree water, which is gathered from a willow tree when the bark is being slipped, when its flowers being drank, clears the face and
Thomas wrote
skin of
this.
spots.
That's who wrote
I
this.
think so.
Thomas Laundry, he wrote this. Yeah, carry
And
on.
also flaxweed. So flaxweed can also get rid of, as well as freckles, leprosy.
Oh, okay. So leprosy, all this time, all those people that went to sort of leper colony, and died these awful deaths, that's all they needed. God, who knew?
Flaxseed.
Like,
So I
still
think,
get that. You can get in Lidden Farm Shop. That's a shout out to Lidden Farm Shop because I love them. But there you go. There you go.
So I think that's my, I could, you know, there's a lot more we could discuss, but that's my little sojourn into
Oh, I love it.
medieval
You nailed
beauty
it.
standards, is that not only are they ridiculous, some of them, with your big high forehead, which also, if you didn't have a high forehead, I'm blessed with a nine head. I've got a massive forehead, which I've covered very
You do your
artistically
full
with a
fringe,
fringe.
yeah.
But if you're not blessed like
It.
me and you don't have a big forehead, you pluck away your hairs until you do.
You'll be fine.
You'll be
You'll
fine. And then
be
you've got to have
absolutely fine.
tiny, thin eyebrows that are very far
Oh,
apart.
which a lot of millennials have got because thank you, Moth, in the 90s. We now all tell our nieces to don't pluck your eyebrows.
Mine have never grown back properly.
Exactly, like let us be a lesson to the following generations. Don't touch your eyebrows because those don't go back. It's not like a bikini line, which comes back like Jacob Marley. That thing will haunt me to my dying day. You can do whatever, and the bikini line's like, I'm back. I just thought you might want me to come back to this party. It's like, you are like a ghost with unfinished business. Stay away.
Rattling of chain.
Eyebrows. Eyebrows are like that person you can't pin down. They're like, sorry, this isn't working for me. Like, oh, but I like you. Yeah, sorry.
Bye.
And then all of a sudden, pubic hair just chaps you on the shoulder, like, but I'm here. Oh, thank God. And your friend leg hair.
And
Hi, old friends.
yeah, and I think
I love that you're like, yeah.
I was trying to think of something astute, but I can't beat the idea of that the Marley and Marley. That's kind of made the episode, I think, for me.
Like the plant on the Dickens thing here, it's
It is.
Pubes, not a money lender. Oh, interesting. Wonder if Miriam Margley's interested.
But I just think that
Joke, sorry,
as
please. Yeah, keep.
many beauty standards are, medieval beauty standards were ridiculous, and that it put so much pressure on young women at their kind of advent of life. And also, you get a lot of medieval queens. I've mentioned Eleanor of Aquitaine, but you get kind of a lot of medieval queens like Edward III's wife, and other women being put forward as these bastions of what a woman should be, and it completely takes away from their personhood. And I think so much of what we can see in these actually denies a woman the personhood. And it was really, I suppose, sad in a way to look at some of these beauty trends and then see that there was still such gendered pressures on women now as there were then and that kind of thing. So I think it's very interesting. And I've only scratched the surface, to be honest, today, because I don't want it to just be the me talking about weird medieval cures and ointments and things.
History
But
of
certainly
tarot.
I'd I definitely recommend having a little look if you're interested.
I think it's just extraordinary. I know I say that to my, I think it's fascinating. Do you always think that? But it is the thing is, and I noticed that when we go back and do editing to it and things like that it is always me go, I think that's fascinating. Really? How extraordinary of you to say that. But it is really interesting. And I think, like we keep saying, this parallel between us and them, I'm just staving off a sneeze. No, I think we're okay. Is that it's still relatable, except these days, of course, a lot of us sort of prefer that kind of, fresh off holiday look and all this kind of thing. And, we associate maybe being too pale with kind of being like a Victorian child with consumption or something. But, the Tudor court, let's look at, of course, one of the kind of the iconic, if not sort of controversial figures of beauty, Anne Boleyn, who is dark haired. Accounts differing. I think maybe the safe bet is kind of mid to dark brunette rather than like black haired. But I think there is this sort of trope, isn't it, of this very dark hair that always kind of goes to the Disney villain S type thing. And I say that as a dark haired girl growing up, that there was all these, all the girls were blonde and the baddies always had dark hair. And I was like, great. But thanks, Disney. That's good. But Anne Boleyn, when she was described as having a sallow complexion or a swarthy complexion, I can't remember, I think it was sallow complexion, with a bosom not much raised. And I was like, same. I hear you. But it's this idea that you become public property from the size of your waist to the size of your boobs to the color of your hair. And do you know what? There's some fascinating things going into the Renaissance era. Women, and I love this because imagine. So we all know what a merkin is, obviously, and for those that don't, basically it's a pubic wig, okay, which they use for a number of reasons, sometimes venereal diseases, things like this. Sometimes this discord with body hair is not new, this obsession, but people always have, like the boomers that are kind of like, oh, I remember 70s porn with the big bush and all the rest of it. This interest in body hair and distaste for body hair is not new. And in fact, there were recipes where I think you could say a sort of like the Lord's Prayer or Hail Mary, I can't remember how many times, a few times, and then you had to quickly take it off because otherwise this sort of lotion would take the skin off. And to be honest, like, hair removal cream, yeah, there is a long history going right into ancient times of people wanting to get rid of body hair. So there always seems to be this idea that it was when dresses and things changed and legs were on show. It's not as simple as that. It went on for a long time. And actually, there was a culture, I think it was around the Crusades, but they had, like, going into the Middle East and things, but they with the bathing and things, they would get rid of pubic hair and things like that. So some men came back with a taste for it. So there was this call of women getting rid of their their pubic hair. And again, the history of this, you can have men with hairy backs and hairy ears and everything else, but if you let your bikini line get a bit unruly, you just got to get your life in check. It's like, meanwhile, men looking like tumbleweed. We're just so glad that you're here. But anyway, I'm not going to go into just man bashing, but I think we know how we feel. No, I love men, but I think there are just some men that you're like, why don't you just shut up? Let's look at things that I find quite funny. So, when we're looking at beauty, let's look at cod pieces or cod flaps, which the cod flap is, I know it's a cod piece, but cod flap is just fucking brilliant. So you get this idea of women, don't do this, cover this, wear that. But meanwhile, the men are like, I don't know if you've seen the size of my cock. And you're like, that's not actually the size of my cock. That is, in fact, material. It alludes to what I'm packing down there. And then they sort of take off their breeches and you go, oh, false advertising. Turns out you're the catfish. But anyway, I think it's really brilliant that they had these kind of ideas, because I think beauty, it isn't just down to makeup and things like that. I think it's also the clothes and things like this. And when they had these sort
Yes.
of padded jackets, these things that kind of gave the illusion of a fuller chest, of a larger penis, or these sort of garters around the knee with the hose that kind of gave a more defined leg. And they were forever just getting hard-ons over Henry VIII's legs, weren't they? They were all, I know they were kind of like, imagine fawning over him, and they're like, "Have you seen his calf? Have you seen his calf?" And it's like, "Oh God, look, I know your suck-ups, but stop tossing off over Henry VIII's
Stop
calf.
it.
Like,
Have
actually,
you seen?
his
Have
personality
you?
was a walking ick. Like, he might
Yeah.
have cars, but God, he was a dick."
Have you seen his armor at the Leeds Armouries?
Yeah.
It's got the most ridiculous cod piece area I've ever seen. I think it's brilliant. That cod flap is flapping.
That cod flap is like, it's not taking your eye out. It's going to give you an aneurysm. You're like, Jesus,
Yes.
that's going to write your car off. Like, what is that?
Going
I
into battle
think
with that.
what's happened there, Henry, is not that you've got a large penis. I think you've got possibly a hiatus hernia, not a hiatus, which is the one that drops down into your carotid. I can't remember the name, but
I know what you mean.
that anyone medical is like, that's not hiatus. Hiatus is inside. But that looks to me like it's when there is, if someone's penis looked as big as that, they've got a hernia problem. I think I like that's a hernia.
Maybe you could keep his sandwiches there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Whatever that guy, when we know he was eating a lot, maybe that's where he kept his stash. Oh God, I bet he would have loved that, wouldn't he? Go down there and have a little feast. Do you mind if I don't, actually? Do you mind
Yeah,
if I stay
no.
away from there because your leg's a bit whiffy and
Yeah, you
your
do
cod
need.
piece is giving me the ick. But I realized I went on to say, and then I skipped over it, but there were, I don't know why I love this so much, but do you know what? I'm laboring it. I feel like this isn't going to disappoint. Hair dyes historically were quite shit. So they would have access to things like henna, but they would do things like chamomile to lighten hair, things like this, which if you're dark like you and I is going to do sweet chuff all, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's not amazing.
And as any dark-haired girls know, dark hair tends to go grey a bit quicker than light hair, sadly, or when
Yeah.
it seems quicker, which is whether it's more visible, whatever. I don't know the science, but sadly, it just seems to be so. But they would have these women that would start to wear hoods. And they would have dark hair, like kind of fixed to the outside of the hood, so it looked like it was their hair. But when
Oh,
they
wow.
took it off, it was just attached. Can you imagine if you were like, it's your wedding night or something, and you were like, just gonna take my hood off, and you were like, sorry, what is attached to that? That's my fake dark hair.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, yeah, that's a look, isn't it? Oh, it is a bit, yeah. Like this, okay. And there were some Venetian women. You can always rely on the Venetians just to be very, very cool. They had, brace yourself, listeners and me, they had these sort of wicker hats, like the old-fashioned boaters that kind of Brideshead Revisited, that kind of thing. They're
Yes.
a bit like that, but larger. So they would shade the face, but on the crown there was a hole. And they would bring the hair through from it, and they would go and sit up on the roofs of their houses with their hair sort of like fawning out in the sun, and it would bleach the hair. And they'd have these sort of like, I suppose, like almost like coteries of women sitting around with their hair sitting at the top of these hats, bleaching their hair in the sun. It's
I
fab,
love
isn't
that.
it? I
Yeah, that's
mean,
amazing.
I'd have to spend some sort of time in the sun, I think.
Yeah, I
Just kind of
wonder.
gets like a ready sort of singe look, doesn't it, in the sun? But I just thought it was marvelous. I think also when you look at things like the bolstered hips, when they made their bottoms look bigger, under their dresses, so things hung better. And this went into the Georgian era as well. And those that couldn't afford them would use feather dusters as well. And they're kind of quite industrious, just to sort of
Yeah.
puff out the old bum. And then of course corsets, which I think we'll go more into corsets and stays things when we talk about the Victorians. It's quite a
Yes,
controversial
yeah.
subject, but I think it's one that can really be kind of gone into more detail with the Victorians, because I know that they don't belong to Victorians, but I think that's kind of their key, such a key part of their look, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think if we even look at things like false teeth, so you would they as as put in an episode of Sharp. Now that's dating me, how old I am. I think it's not Pete Postlethwaite, I can't remember the guy's name who has a horse's teeth in, but there were battles, so Waterloo was a case in point, and way before then as well, centuries before, they would take good teeth out of corpses' mouths and things like this, and children as well. They would take children's teeth and they would put them into, pull out the rotten teeth, put them into the gum and things like this. But often, of course, they wouldn't take. They also had false teeth, and they had women that would wear these false teeth. Not just women, but particularly, of course, they were marketed as women because it was seen as women's vanity. And they would wear these teeth, and things would happen, like they would wear them to bed because they didn't want to take them off, take them out in front of their husband. So then they would, like, they could choke on them and things like that. They also became a whole thing of them eating separately, where they would go and eat in their own rooms, and they even had young girls that would do that as well. Sort of, it became almost like a social thing, because of the nature of eating with these false teeth. I think it's just extraordinary. But you've got, in terms of like skin whitening, going into the Georgian era, still the same thing. You could use horse manure and vinegar, classic.
Nice.
Lead still going through. Lead still went through. The Victorians used it as well. They also used to use this sort of almost like a blue crayon, color the veins, because if you've got green veins, which I have, which is more kind of olivey skinned, yellow skin toned, or blue is like that very I always think of that skin tone, as people who see Pillarbox red is like a very pale skin tone. So they would draw veins on to look like they'd got those blue veins, because that's what they wanted, was that kind of very sort of, as you said as well, that very pale look. They would also use belladonna in their eyes, because it gave you a dilated pupil. It will send you
course.
blind. So I look great. Oh, I can't see. Oh God. Is it worth going blind? I'm going to say no. I think,
No, I'd probably caution to say probably not.
yeah, just I don't think it's worth it for dilated pupils. But as I say, you know, people do bizarre things to themselves now, don't they? So like the turkey teeth and things like that, and you're like, I don't know, if fake teeth are going to cost you know, under a grand, there's probably a reason. And then they come back, my life's over, my teeth fell out. You're like, well, I'm not being funny. You know, you got them done very cheap. There's probably, I don't think they deserve it, obviously, but I'm just saying, I think it's,
No.
you know, sometimes there are things you're like, just don't do it, mate. Just keep your teeth as they are. So the other thing as well, I love this, are patches. So mooches, mouche, I can, no, I can't say it properly, but anyway, these are little things. So Marilyn Monroe, she drew hers, but these became synonymous with the Georgian era, didn't they? These little sort of, basically, so they could use silk, they could use black velvet. Some people said mouse fur. They also, I don't know how popular these were. I think it was more that it was suggested, but I don't think they ever took off with any kind of weight. Were mouse fur eyebrows? Yeah. Yes. Bearing in mind, most mice are like a browny grey colour. You're like, what colour I want my eyebrows to be? And the mouse is like, don't look over here, mate. But yeah, they would have them cut into sort of an arch, whatever the shape, and wear those. I think it's more likely, when you look into it, that that was more of a kind of flash in the pan, a bit like you might see something funny on Amazon that you think, I'm not quite sure. You know, they've had like a take on something that you're like, yeah, but I'm pretty sure that that's not actually going to work, or going to be kind of worthwhile. It's one of those things. Patches also then, of course, became excuse me, synonymous with brothels, and this idea of a haggard madame who would wear one. Sometimes they were used to cover signs of things like syphilis, and we mentioned mercury earlier, and the mercury treatment would ravage the body as well. And they said, of course, the phrase was a night with Venus and a lifetime with Mercury. They would take the lozenges, different lozenges, to sweeten the breath and things like this. So there's lots of things that we still do. And going into kind of the era of the giant wigs and all these things, that these kind of precarious, great, big, huge wigs that must have weighed a ton, and they'd have a number of people doing the. I mean, this is going into kind of an upper class thing, but there were people that were kind of coming, traveling, and they would say that they came off ships and they thought the women were were sort of sitting awkwardly and things, and they'd shoved hair, like they come from France and the Americas as well, and they'd shoved hair and stuff up their skirts and things to try and smuggle this hair back into England so they could sort of make this big hair. Just as people clip in hair pieces today or get extensions and things like that, they were doing exactly the same thing. The Georgians absolutely loved huge hair, like that was their vibe, and we mean like big, and they would put their faces into these wonderful sort of conical masks, and then their hair would be sprayed with powder that sort of made it look whiter, and perfumes and various things. But also they would stink as well, so, and there were sort of various nursery rhymes and poems and things that came out at the time, and most of them were tongue-in-cheek, but talking about how they had sort of dear old granny and had very, very smelly hair and things like that. I mean, that sounds a bit like a sort of horrible euphemism, but it's not. That's harrowing. And I think things like the Myers-Briggs, that's kind of in a sort of, in some respects, comical as well. But they were penciling, they were using coals and things like that because, of course, lead, I don't think it can be kind of underestimated that lead did, when it's applied to the face, cause hair loss and people's eyebrows would fall out. And of course, generally, unlike in medieval times where they wanted, you know, the sort of unfinished, the pale eyelashes, no eyebrow looking thing was great. The Georgians were a bit more into kind of the French brow, you know, that sort of very, like the dark, kind of quite natural looking brow, as natural as a Myers brow can look. But I think the other sort of idea of this is going into the fact that also men in this kind of time were very into their appearance as well. Like I say, this idea of having well-formed legs, just as they'd had in the Tudor era, was coming back, and they could insert pads anywhere the male would like to boost. So I'm going to say cock and bum. I'm just going to say, like, guys, just a guess. I don't know. I think the Georgians liked, you know, they liked a fuller bum on the men as well, which, you know, to each their own, fine. But if they were a bit skinny and they felt they needed a bit more padding, just pad their breeches front and back. So although they didn't kind of have the cod piece, they would pad a bit behind that little, you know, that little sort of flap that buttons, I don't know what it's called. There might be a fashion historian listening to this, that it flops down. And I just love this sort of image of them just tucking that in and then doing up the buttons and being like, off I go with my...
Yeah, no one will know.
Yeah, the illusion of my big peen. The other thing as well is people have always been aware of teeth and having good teeth. And lead would blacken teeth. So Queen Elizabeth I famously had black teeth. She also very famously had a sweet tooth. So, you know, it's likely to have been probably a combination of the two, because she also had smallpox and she had very pale skin. So she would have had to cover, wouldn't have had it, but obviously chose to. And the idea of things like this Venetian cerise was to make you look younger and you could stay on the marriage market for longer. And Elizabeth I, although obviously never married or probably intended to, her whole image was this virgin, was forever young, was the sort of the face of the country and everything. So, you know, she had to hide her smallpox scars and that sort of thing, because when she was young, famously, she was very natural. And then as she got older, when she had smallpox, it changed the amount she had to wear. And the thing is with Venetian cerise, the more often you use it, the more you need. So it's a vicious circle, and side effects are even worse. So I did think it was interesting to discover that it blackens the teeth. And so there are feelings that, you know, it would be decay from her diet, but also the lead probably was having some sort of kind of contributing factor to that as well. And they would use tooth powders and things like this, and they would use in some cases coral ground up, which I think would have been great if you don't like having enamel. I think go for it. Bicarbonate soda, cuttlefish, they called it spirit of vitriol, which is sulfuric acid, which great. What's that one they always take on James Bond? A cyanide, I feel like.
Yes.
Like, just pop this into your mouth, would you, dear? But it's incredible. And I think the, you know, face packs as well. So they would use, they called them cutaneous eruptions, spots. But fard, which I think is fantastic. Fard is a mix of sweet almond oil and spermace. I can never, it's a waxy substance found on a sperm whale. So a spermaceti, I can't say it, and honey that was dissolved over heat. And once it was cooled, you applied it to the face, and that was supposed to have been sort of to look after your skin, really. I think that, so recipes like that, I think there were some that were probably relatively harmless, but that went into the Victorian era. And in fact, the sort of the sperm, well, you can no longer get it now, but there are recipes that have not aged so well in terms of things looking a little bit cruel. And I think it's, to me, I think I just find this idea that whether it's sort of 200 years ago, 400 years ago, whatever it may be, you know, from bare fat to arsenic, all these things, this idea of beauty standards and the things that we need and this kind of advertising. So, you know, Henry VIII famously, they were saying, liked this idea of the English rose. Of course he did. And so he also liked the smell of rose. So people would wear rose water and things like that. And it would literally be this kind of image of what an English rose looked like. And you could smell rose in the court and all this kind of thing. There was a whole sort of, just as there is today, you know, when you get these just frankly ridiculous perfume adverts and they end with things like Daisy, Daisy, Daisy. And there's just some pretty women rolling around a field saying Daisy repeatedly. And you're like, what?
Yeah, what was
Yeah,
that?
they just come up with a giant bottle of perfume. They're like, don't whisper in my direction. My cat's got, I don't know, fleas or something. You know, they say these ridiculous things in the camera and then walk away. And you're like, oh, you've got Johnny Depp burying jewelry. Well, not so much now, controversial, but you know, he was burying jewelry in the desert or something. And you were like sort of, you know, kind of feigning Native American ancestry or whatever it is. You know, these all kind of very sort of culturally inappropriate, just fetishizing strange things over a perfume. But it's no different. You know, we've
No.
still done it. We did it then, we do it now, and they had bear's grease. It was probably goose fat, you know, but the wigs and things would get fleas and various things in them as well. Just as when they talk about turkey teeth today, they're saying these sort of bright white teeth, well, actually they end up getting decay and things like that from the teeth that have been filed down behind. So you're like, yum, yum. That sounds
No
delicious.
different, is it?
No, it hasn't changed at all. Hip pads, rumps, things like this obsession with false with big bums, things like that. It's all there, big bums, big boobs. So they didn't have boob jobs, but they had things that they could do that kind of eluded, as we do today, to kind of give you the height that you wanted, the shape, the waist, whatever. So to me, I think it's just extraordinary. I mean, if I was going to ask you, what is your favorite era in terms of fashion and what you think of as beauty? Because beauty is so subjective, isn't it? So I think Georgian's a bit made up, but some people love it. What's your era that you go, yeah, that's the one, they're bloody gorgeous?
So I used to be a big into the 40s and the 50s. That
Oh,
used to be my kind of era that I just thought typified beauty because I really like kind of the pin-up look. But I think as I've got a bit older, to me, I love Edwardian through to about the advent of the 30s, so through from your post-war kind of World War One,
I think I
but even
agree, to be
before
honest.
that, really, Edwardian I think is particularly with I'm a massive fan of Theda Bara, so to me, Theda Bara is the most, and I think her beauty
She was
lies in
gorgeous.
the fact that she has such an interesting face. And I think what I find with that kind of Edwardian 20s and 30s is that you had these women with such interesting faces that had character, that weren't uniform, they weren't all the same, and their beauty lies almost sometimes in their imperfections
Yeah, like
as
Clara
well.
Bow was a funny looking, but I mean, it's funny, she was unusual looking, but beautiful as well. But she was quite unusual looking, wasn't she? I think.
And I think if there was going to be one person that I would like love to look like, it would be Theda. I just
Oh
think she's
yeah,
a queen,
I mean,
absolute queen.
she was so kind of gothicky gorgeous and just, yeah, I think she was absolutely beautiful. I'm with you. I think that kind of Edward, I mean, we'll go into that on the next episode in terms of, like, you know, I know we did it with the musical, but your Lily Langtrees and all these sort of society beauties and Daisy Cannon of Warwick, Victorian Edwardian sort of, and it's an interesting contrast because the Victorians, especially kind of mid 19th century, were all about kind of, you know, the bums, the waists, and all this kind of stuff. And Edwardian era suddenly, things they wanted them thinner and that kind of. And then obviously you go into the 20s and post-war where they really did have kind of like the very flat chests and that sort of look. And you've got that scene, of course, haven't you, in Thoroughly Modern Millie, where Julie Andrews binds her chest and then it pops and comes out. Like, yeah, I always love that. It's iconic. But oh, I know I loved this. I thought it was so, so interesting. And I just thought the other thing to talk about as well, just very quickly, when we're talking about clothes and things, this idea of colours and things that were reserved to royalties. So in purples, things like this, that like a violet that could only really be worn by people of a certain class. And I think, this idea again that people, the only people interested in fashion or beauty were the upper classes, simply isn't true. You
No,
said earlier in the episode that there, who's largely documented, and absolutely, you're right. But I think, as you'll attest, that all walks of life's proclivity for vanity, for looking beautiful, is nature. Cats groom themselves. It's human nature to want to look.
Oh, yeah.
To want to look the best that you can, and in whatever way that may be, and also whatever people find beautiful, I think is subjective. And although we're kind of in a position where that's happening increasingly, it's still not a sort of equal as it ought to be. And I think it's interesting because beauty is also about charisma, is about character, intelligence, presence, whatever. It isn't just any one thing, is it? But if you look at what people count as ethereal beauty in one century, like we say, we might go, bloody hell, she's got a big old forehead, hasn't she? In another, it's you just don't know. And I think if somebody walked up today with looking like they're wearing a cricket cap, I'd be like, why are you bulging like that? And like, just a bit of Henry VIII vibe, isn't it? But
I'd
probably make
do.
My assumptions that you didn't need to talk to him. She's like, I think the bulge in your pants says all I need to know, which is that you're overcompensating, so there's nothing for us to discuss. Just too cock-centric. But I mean, I think it's such a broad and huge subject. I hope we've done it justice today.
Me too.
And I'm very excited for part two, which is going to be Victorian recipes. I've got some skin makeup, sort of makeup recipes for them, and we're going to talk about various things that are going to be fascinating because the Victorians and onwards, and talking about the 60s, and I think if we get a chance in the episode, we can go up to the 90s, but even if we stop at the kind of 50s, 70s, they're still your kind of iconic models and things like that, so it's going to be great. Fab. Anything you want to add?
No, I think we've covered everything, and I think it would be good to talk a little bit about some of the folkloric ideas within Shropshire in the next episode, because a lot of them actually come from the very, very late Georgian and Victorian era. So it'd be good to kind of.
Have you got anything you want to add today? We're not too long. We've got a bit of time if you want to add something.
So just when you mentioned roses, the dog rose, which is a type of rose, during the late Georgian and early Victorian period became synonymous with beauty, so much so in Shropshire that Shropshire women actually would wash their hair with dog rose water or essence, and they would also wear them in their hair to kind of advertise that they were looking for a suitor.
Roses are beautiful. They're very sort of simple, pretty little flowers.
And they would have been readily available in gardens and things. So that's just one example of the wider trends in kind of beauty standards being in a certain area and taking place. But a lot of them are very, very linked, I think, to the next episode. So we'll leave our listeners waiting.
No, I'm really excited to hear about that as well. But guys, thank you so much for all your continued support. We should give a shout out to our Patreon as well. I think get over there and have a look if you want some extra content. And on our socials and all these sort of things. But we've got so much planned for the next few months and going on from there as well. But just thank you so, so much for all your continued support. We both really appreciate it. We talk daily about how great we are for how supportive you guys are. And it's it wouldn't be doing what it's doing if it wasn't for you lot listening and downloading us and all the rest of it. So thank you so much. You are legends, frankly.
Without you guys, we wouldn't be here.
We'd just be talking to ourselves, wouldn't we?
Yeah, which we do anyway, to be honest. But it's so fulfilling to have this vision and this passion for what we have a passion for, and to have people go, actually, this is interesting. So thank you, genuinely. It makes us very happy beans.
Yeah, it does. Exactly. To think that we can laugh about cod pieces and cod flaps and then know that you guys, you're with us, and you kind of go, yeah, I get it. You get it.
Yeah, welcome to the coven.
Exactly. Welcome to the coven. Thank you so, so much. And we'll see you all soon.
See you soon. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Bye.